The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, following the government's announcement to introduce rent pressure zones across the country, the date to introduce the policy is now expected to be moved up. The new measures, which were set to take place in March of next year, now are hoped to be passed within weeks, following some panic within government. Ministers are under increasing pressure to pass the bill to avoid further price hikes for renters. However, housing experts have warned that waiting to introduce the RPZ will cause a rise in rents and therefore an increase in homelessness. To get the latest on this and more, I'm joined by Gabia Gataviskaita, political correspondent with the Irish Independent, and Dr. Lorcan Sir, senior lecturer in housing at TUD. And I'll go to you, Gabia, first. Good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this seems like a mad rush by government. It's extraordinary that they hadn't thought of this before they made the announcement.
Yes, so if your listeners cast their minds back to 2016, when the rental pressure zones were first introduced by Housing Minister Simon Coveney, they were capped at 4%, and they were actually kicked in immediately. I think it was from midnight of the day of the announcement. But of course, this scramble now is underway to implement the entire country and take it under a rent pressure zone. There was some expectation that because it was announced as part of this, you know, huge reforms to the rental market, a lot of those changes are kicking in 1st of March next year. There was an expectation that this also would be kicking in from the 1st of March. And of course, we had experts sounding the warning bells on that one, such as Michelle Norris from the Housing Commission. So the government is now going to scramble in the next couple of weeks to basically come forward with laws to take the whole country under an RPZ. The spokesperson for Housing Minister James Brown has confirmed. But even then, of course, it would be slower than the changes that happened in 2016 when they kicked in more or less immediately.
So how long do they think it's going to take to get this legislation in place? Because, OK, next March is, what, 9 months away, which would give landlords and tenants maybe a chance to readjust to the new regime. But even 3 or 4 weeks would give landlords a chance to hike up rents.
Yes, and that's the risk, really. So the expectation now is that it's likely that it'll happen within weeks, with the spokesperson for Minister Brown saying there's no messing around on this and they're moving as quickly as they can.
Gabby, is that exactly what they said? No messing around?
Yes.
Because that's exactly what we're seeing is messing around.
Well, I mean, you're right in saying that whether it's 9 months that you give for landlords to hike rents or whether it's 2 weeks, you know, for economic reasons, it's expected that they're going to do it. So currently for properties which fall outside of an RPZ, landlords can increase rents every 2 years. So if they haven't increased rents in the past 2 years, this is really their opportunity to do that without, you know, any significant caps on that. Now, the rules there, you know, say you cannot increase rent beyond market rents. But of course, you know, who decides the market rent and so on? That is going to be a challenge, even with the new system that the government is going to have to thumb through. I mean, you'd imagine now that for every property that's outside of an RPZ, the landlords are going to, if they haven't put up rents, try and do so in the next weeks or months before the legislation kicks in. The other concern that's been raised by housing experts is that any landlord now who wants to rent out a property and the property is vacant or the tenant is due to move out, you know, there's no reason for them to be putting it back on the market before the 1st of March, because they will have that ability to reset rents. So we may see a hoarding of properties, if you will.
Now, who kind of sounded the alert on this? Because, you know, the announcement was made and it became blindingly obvious that, you know, it wasn't being done immediately, and therefore there was this kind of interregnum, and anything can happen during that interregnum. Which politicians of which parties sounded the alarm for the minister?
So, look, when the plans were announced earlier this week in detail, I mean, they are quite complicated and there's a lot of moving parts. And so it was journalists asking questions, but also those politicians who have a particular interest in housing, like Sinn Féin's Eoin Óibrin, like Rory Hearn of the Social Democrats, asking exactly what exactly, when do these measures kick in? How long are they going to take to kick in? But it was also housing experts who were pointing to, you know, the obvious sort of differences in RPZ implementation. Like, in fairness, Simon Coveney was a housing minister in 2016. That's not even 10 years ago when this system was first brought in. And the way it was handled then is very different to the way that it's being handled now. What the government is saying is that, look, the sector needs lead-in time. So, you know, there's even a question around why can't all of these changes take place as soon as, to avoid either landlords hiking rents now if they can, or the hoarding of properties. The answer from government is because they have those new rules around the 6-year minimum duration tenancies, they need to give lead-in time to the sector so that they can prepare and know exactly what the new rules are. And that may be fair enough, but you would imagine that for the next couple of months until the new rules kick in, either with the rent pressure zones in the coming weeks or in March 1st of next year, that there will be landlords who will do whatever they can to try and, you know, benefit, I suppose, off the rule changes while they can.
Gabby Gatavis-Gaita, political correspondent with the Irish Independent. Thank you very much. Listening to that conversation, Dr. Lorcan Sir, senior lecturer in housing at TUD. Lorcan, what do you make of this?
Morning, Pat. Well, actually, there's a third category of people that Gabby missed there, who are incredibly vulnerable, and that's people who have leases from before June 2022. So under those leases, every 6 years, a landlord can, for no reason, ask a tenant to leave for a period of 6 months. Sorry, there's a period of 6 months in which the landlord can ask the tenant to leave. And so anybody who has a lease before June 22, and that's coming up, when that comes up to 6 years, the landlord has the right to, a perfectly legal right to evict them effectively, and then wait until March next year and set the rents at the new hugely increased rents. And just for context, in the last 6 years, rents in Dublin have gone up 31%, and they've gone up over 40% nationally. So that would be quite a hike that the landlord would be getting.
Yeah, I'm a bit mystified by this huge hike in the rents, both in Dublin and elsewhere in the country. You know, a €1,500 a month property, say 5 years ago, is up to $2,500 now, $1,000 added on. And you're thinking, hang on, 2% or 4% or whatever it might be, it does not amount to €1,000 on a €1,500 rent. How come?
Yeah, well, because rents, if you're there, for example, for 10 years, so I have an article in the Irish Times today, and I went back and looked at the RTB rent for the last decade, and rents have gone up 100% past in the last decade. If you are ensconced in a tenancy for the last, you know, five years or so, your rent has going to be capped. It will be about, you know, 60% of what the rents are today, and the rents will have been capped 2% per year. When that lease ends, or if there's a new lease arrangement, as the department call it, by March next year, your rent is going to jump from whatever it is to the market right now, which is probably a jump of about 40%. So that's how that happens. And it's going to be a huge, huge burden on people. I can see a lot of people becoming homeless over this. And it sounds kind of incredible to think that people who are currently renting, paying 1500 or whatever a month rent, would ever become homeless. But this is how homelessness happens. I mean, the direct entry to homelessness, the biggest entry, is straight from the private rental sector.
Now, the solution to this is obviously supply, and the government, you know, they're muttering about giving incentives to developers, some sort of Section 23, Section 27 revisited. They're talking about those kind of things, which, of course, will lead developers to do nothing until they get clarity on whether or not there's some dosh coming their way. And then, of course, they're trying to lure international capital, international pension funds in to either purchase what Irish builders are building or to commission their own construction, because they want more build to rent, simply to increase the number of premises, but it doesn't satisfy the desire for ownership in the Irish population.
No, so there's two things there, Pat. One is the idea of supply will solve all our problems. Well, it might solve all our problems, but if you think rents have gone up 100% in the last decade, it will take a hell of a lot of supply to level out or reverse that rental increase trend. And of course, no builder builds or no pension fund builds when rents are falling or when house prices are falling. That's not the way, that's not their business model. So in other words, rents have to keep rising to incentivize rental supply. So at what stage will rents ever stop rising? And the answer is probably never, if that's the model. So the second thing is then, what happens is, you're absolutely right, the government were panicked last year because their 40,000 promise of new housing completions turned out to be 30,300. And in a desperate attempt to get those numbers up again this year, which they will be, but not a whole lot, they're turning to the apartment development sector, because that's the quickest way to get, you know, a lot of units delivered very quickly. The problem there is they're all for rent. Like in the last 2 years, 95% of all developments in Dublin have been apartments, and 95% of those have been rent for rent. So there's nowhere for people to buy. So you end up with a whole lot of people who are in the rental sector who don't want to be, or are moving out to, you know, beyond Mullingar and places like that, and buying a second car and commuting into Dublin. Precisely the opposite of what Eamon Ryan was in government for, to promote, which is sustainable development. So the idea of incentivizing, you know, a market to do what you want, you just can't incentivize a market. There's different goals than the government have. And so it won't happen. So the state will need to come up with a better solution than that.
Now, one of the solutions that you can see unfolding before your eyes if you drive down to the Glass Bottle site is a huge densification around Dublin Port, I suppose. And there'll be thousands and thousands of units in that particular development. They're high enough, maybe 12 stories, 14 stories, but many people would say they're simply not high enough. When you've got a real estate that is close to where people are going to be working and close to amenities, build as high as is aesthetic, I suppose, and let people live there.
Sure. This is a common argument put forward by people who don't understand how planning and development works, to be honest with you. A high rise is really expensive to build, Pat. So if you're spending more money building higher buildings, what comes out the other end, whether it's a sales price if you're building apartments for sale, or whether it's rents, if you need to get a return from high rise, the rents or the sales prices are going to be commensurately higher. That's the way development works. The other thing is, when you go to buy the land, if I go to buy a site down the Glass Bottle, on the Glass Bottle site, if it has planning permission for 5 stories, I might give them 5 million. If it has planning permission for 25 stories, I'm going to pay a huge amount more for the land. So before I even hire a builder to build it for me, I'm already deep in the hole of debt because I've paid so much more for it. So then whatever comes out the other end is going to be commensurately higher. The Department of Housing did their own research on this, which they straight away then ignored. And they said, and it's quite rightly, it's proven all around Europe, that about 6 stories is the sweet spot between getting a right amount of density, but also so that it's not overly expensive, so what comes out the other end isn't unaffordable for people.
And yet we are giving permissions for more than 6 stories now.
Yeah, absolutely. And what comes out of the airport will be very expensive. So, you know, if you take your average, Dublin bus driver or whatever, you know, Dublin bus drivers typically are the people who are on the national average wage. And so they're always a good example. You know, so what are they going to be able to afford on their 50 grand a year down at the Glass Bottle site? And the answer is nothing. And where will they end up living? And the answer is somewhere west of Mullingar and driving in at all hours of the morning, which is exactly what we don't want. So the high-rise stuff, the sweet spot is around 6 stories. And you see this, and you know, when you go to Spain and Middle Europe and all those kinds of things, the streets are a nice scale and an affordable scale. If you start doing high-rise, as I said many times, high-rises for high rollers.
Now, you know, we wouldn't start from here if we were designing the whole system all over again. But you can allow people or persuade people to live out of town if you've got rapid transit, public transport available. We haven't put that in place. We have a few suburban rail lines and, you know, we're promising metro and we're doing this, that and the other. But the idea, like if you're in the greater London area, you can be living in Brighton and get into the centre of London fairly quickly and comfortably. And the same is true of most of the European cities. If you don't live in the centre, if you live outside, there are rapid ways of getting to your place of work. I mean, we're in a terrible mess.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of it stems from a lack of investment. And if you think about your transport example, which is a good one, if we build a metro and we build lots of high rise, particularly, say, alongside the metro, what you're going to end up then is spending a lot of taxpayers' money putting in really nice infrastructure for incredibly wealthy people who are renting expensive apartments along the route. And everybody then who would actually benefit from public transport and affordable public transport is still left in the 10-year-old 3-Series BMW or Skoda Octavia way down the country and driving in every day. So it also then, this high-rise stuff links in with transport and value for money effectively for people. So we'll end up supplying really good public infrastructure such as Metro or a New Lewis or whatever for people who arguably don't need it. And then the people who do need it in terms of, you know, financially affordable transport for people who do need it won't benefit from it at all.
Now, you know, the opposition will always criticise the government and all the various schemes and proposals. If there were simple solutions, I mean, I'm sure the Mandarins in Merrion Street and elsewhere would actually, in Marlborough Street, would have figured it out. Is there a solution that they're missing?
You think they would, Pat, after all this time? So the issue there is that they're far too keen to entice industry and to bend over backwards for what industry wants, rather than going for the simple solution. And one of the solutions is out there. We have 140 billion in people saving, sitting in banks, earning very little interest on deposit accounts. And the French, in 1813, the French set up a system called Livret A. And it's a fund, basically, that people can put their money into. It's tax-free, so no dirt tax on it. It's a fund that people can put their money into to use specifically for infrastructure and especially housing. And there's no reason why we couldn't set up one of those. And then what you do with that money is you use it to build housing for sale. And housing for sale is a bit different financially than building housing for rent. If you're building housing for rent, you're investing in it, and it could take you 40 years before you pay off that building. That's the model, right?
Yeah.
So every building you build, you have to spend an awful lot of money and wait for 40 years.
And this, by the way, suits pension funds. That's the kind of investment that they like to make, a guaranteed return, steady, and pensioners get their pensions. That's the model. However, it's not what we need.
And if you build housing for sale, because remember our home ownership rate is plummeting, if you build housing for sale, you spend the money, you build the housing, you sell the housing, you recycle the same money again. So effectively what you need is seed money. You need money to get going at the start. I think if there was a Livret A, if there was a solidarity fund specifically for housing, I think Irish people would pile their savings into it and give it a return more than Bank of Ireland or AIB, I think, and use it for building housing for sale. I think people would absolutely lap that up, because they see their own kids living at home, you know, in their early 30s, and they think this is wrong. And it is wrong, absolutely. We're one of the latest countries in Europe to have our kids living with us. And, you know, a lot of that is down to housing. And kids emigrating, a lot of that is down to housing. So I think people would pile their savings into something like this if they knew it was going to help their own children get their feet on, I hate this phrase, property ladder, but, you know, get themselves in a home ownership position.
All right. A lot of money available then, but could we build?
Oh, we could indeed, because there's a lot of construction, you know, workers out there. The problem is they're doing what I would call the wrong thing. You know, they're out there building apartments for rent, and they're building data centres and hotels and logistics centres and all that. But, you know, we could redirect a lot of labour and scale into building housing for sale.
Dr. Lorcan, sir, Senior Lecturer in Housing at TUD, thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
Well, just one day to go to a guaranteed winner of €104,000 at the deposit on a home, perhaps. Last Friday, somebody missed our call, which means it was a rollover. If you entered all last week, you're still in to win, but if not, text PLAY to 57557 before 3 tomorrow afternoon. Or alternatively, you can now enter online by visiting newstalk.com/cashmachine, where you'll find our terms and conditions. The cost is €2.50 plus any network charges. It's for over 18s only. You're playing across the Go Loud network of stations. After 3 then, tomorrow afternoon, we randomly make the call. If it's to your phone, you must answer within 5 rings. You tell us the number and then you get the cash. Of course, if you don't answer, we keep calling until we find our winner. So that amount again, €104,000, and it's tax-free. Text PLAY to 57557. Some of the comments on housing. The government totally incompetent when it comes to addressing the housing disaster in this country. The best thing they can do for now is stop chopping and changing the regulations. For the sake of all of us, just stop. That's from Dave in Galway. When a person leaves a rented home, that home does not disappear. It's either rented or sold to somebody else. We need to increase supply of public and private rentals and also the supply of new homes for sale. I have a property in Cork that the tenants vacated a few weeks ago. At present, if I wanted to relet it, the rent would be around €1,100 per month because of the RBZ rules. However, if I leave it vacant and wait until March the 1st next year and avail of all the new rules, I can get a market rent of around €1,800 per month. So the best financial advice for me would be to leave it vacant until the new rules kick in. I think a lot of other property owners will be doing exactly the same thing. That's from Michael in Cork. And Frank in Dublin says, I'm a smallish landlord and none of my places are at or above the average rent in Dublin because I stuck to the 2% hikes. The average rents, either from brand new tenancies or people breaking the 2%, that's how you get those high numbers. The RPZ is fair, but if a tenant voluntarily leaves, it's insanity that the new renter coming along gets to benefit from the previous renter's low rent. It should go back to market rate and people would be a lot more willing to stay in the market. By the way, the short-term letting planning permission rule is being flouted on a huge scale. Why can't they clamp down on this? It would help a lot. That's from Frank.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.